And we're back.
From where?
Good to see you, Joe. Been a while.
Ages.
Yeah.
Ages. Too long.
Howdy, peeps. Yeah, lots to catch up on. More of the same, really. Although there's new stuff, too. Obviously, was it last night? Hard to keep up with so much going on these days. Last night, the terror attack. No, it was 2 nights ago. The terror attack in Moscow.
Mm-hmm. Friday night.
March 22nd. That means today is a day of national mourning in Russia. 1 week to the day that Putin was re-elected for the fifth time in a landslide election. Quite a contrast in the space of a week. Do you want to start with that?
It's an antidote to his election, no?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's part of the... What went into... You know, doing it, the rationale for doing it. Because you've got headlines like in the West, you know, well, things were looking good in Russia, but now they're looking terrible. Russian state, you know, trembling, you know.
Yeah.
CNN headline there.
There's a CNN headline right here.
Oh, you probably saw the same thing I saw.
Yet another powerful blow to Putin.
That's a variation of mine, yeah.
Barely a week since Putin secured his fifth presidential term, Russia has been plunged into carnage and disarray.
Yeah.
Plunged into carnage. That's so much. You can tell so much in the Western media what they want to be true by how they phrase their headlines, how they spin their headlines, you know. This is what they would really like to be the case. They would really love if Russia was plunged into carnage and disarray. Like the whole country, right?
Yeah.
All...
The rats fleeing, you know, the sinking ship.
Millions of square miles.
Yeah.
And all 170-some million people are all plunged into carnage and disarray.
Yeah. All the way over in Russia's Far East, they're getting on boats right now.
Yeah, well, there's carnage over there as well. There's carnage and disarray
everywhere. They're pleading with Alaska to let them in.
Yeah.
Slight variation on that. This is the same CNN article, but maybe... You got yours on social media. The headline here I have is, appalling Moscow terror attack is a blow to Putin because he promised them security and he failed to deliver.
Mm.
Like, guys, you're not serious. They're very serious. That's what they're going with. So that's what it's meant. That's what your snapshot. That's what your take home from this terror attack is. So when it comes to motivation and who exactly, the headlines in the West kind of always are the tell about why something like this happens. Latest death toll. I'm not sure about this. I thought it was 133.
Yep.
I saw another figure, 15 something, but maybe I think it's 133 in the end.
Yeah.
People have seen this. Five gunmen. Or four. Four gunmen, one assist, I'm not sure. With others, of course, around and about, probably for for comms and escape cars and stuff. But they were all caught fleeing southwest, which led to six others being arrested, which is interesting because there's a theory. It's a theory. I don't know if it's actually anything factual to it, that they were surveilled and pursued at a distance out of Moscow to see where they were going.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they got within a certain distance of a certain other country, that's when they jumped on them and they were hiding in a forest or something, up trees and stuff.
That's the four guys, yeah. Four main shooters.
In the Bryansk region, which is next to
Ukraine.
Country 404. Which enabled, or whatever, that's what Putin was referring to when he gave a televised address about it last night. And he mentioned another detail, which is that it looked like, he didn't claim it definitively, he said it looked like passage for these gunmen was pre-prepared for them on the Ukrainian side of the border. Strongly suggesting that that's where he's thinking this is all emanating from, obviously connected to. The gunmen are all Tajiks, probably mercenaries.
Mm-hmm.
More on that in a minute. One of them has already confessed to being paid $500,000 for the job. Again, it's coin that's important here, not ideology.
Mm-hmm.
That's fuck all. That's $5,000, more or less. The suspect also claimed that he was instructed as to where the attack should take place. Mm-hmm. But that to connect that then with what the Russians said, that there was a stash of weapons already there when they arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it's more than just these four guys.
Well, this is a picture that was released by a photographer who was at the Crocus Center. That's his camera, and that's a picture of one of them. He took that picture of the guy because there was some kind of event at that center on March 7th. And March 7th also happens to be the date when the U.S. government released a warning to its
all embassy staff
in Russia, yeah, to you know, avoid public places, including concert halls. So they released it on the same day that these guys were in scoping out, I suppose, on October 7th, scoping out the concert hall.
Interesting. This 2 weeks of the day, both British and US embassies warned them. And they specifically said ISIS, I think they said it would be a warning of a terrorist attack, large-scale gatherings, ISIS.
Of course, that's just the CIA being helpful, not really to Russia, because it was very vague. It was just to their general citizens. You see that happen, that's another marker of something, marker of a Western hand in it, when Western intel gets... Here's intelligence chatter about a possible terror attack at a concert hall in Russia, and then 2 weeks later, there's a terror attack at a concert hall in Russia.
The day after, March 8th, the FSB arrested two guys, well, they killed two guys during an attempted arrest. They were Kazakh nationals. They were supposedly plotting an attack at a synagogue in Kaluga, mm-hmm. on the southern side of Moscow. That was March 8th. Mm-hmm. And then we thought at the time, well, maybe that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently not. But it just goes to show how frequently there are issues, terror plots and FSB raids and stuff. It happens often in Russia. That same day, March 8th, there was a separate incident. And this was a lot less ISIS-y and more Ukrainian. It was a Belarusian supranationalist. They said, the FSB report says that he was paid by the SBU. Mm-hmm. And they went to arrest him somewhere in a remote place north of Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
And he was firing at them. So they killed him, and the place was full of bomb-making stuff. So
yeah, this is the alert from the U.S. Embassy and Consulate on March 7th. You can see there, that's on the U.S. Embassy and Consulate in Russia. And the embassy is monitoring reports that extremists have imminent plans to target large gatherings in Moscow to include concerts. That's the only one they mentioned specifically, concerts. But it said over the next 48 hours. So it's interesting that guy was there, one or more of the actual one of the Guns for Hire was there on that same day that the U.S. Embassy released that. U.S. government released it. And they said over the next 48 hours, so maybe there was a plan for it to happen at that time. I'll be very specific. Knowledge that the U.S. government had. But anyway, yeah. I don't know how much more evidence you need that the U.S. is behind this. I mean, obviously just in terms of rationale, it doesn't make any sense. The Western media is all talking about ISIS, ISIS-K, ISIS Khorasan, whatever. ISIS did it. They just want everybody to believe ISIS did it. When it's obviously not an ISIS-type attack. ISIS or actual ISIS acolytes are fervent in their own misguided way, fanatical Muslims, and
they don't intend to get caught.
They don't intend to get caught. It's nearly always a jihadi, a martyrdom type thing, where they would just keep going and then they'd try and, they'd engage with any security force that came, and then they would just die, and it would be wonderful for them to die in such a martyrdom way.
Or they'd have a suicide vest.
Or a suicide vest, yeah. So these four guys, definitely not ISIS.
Curious detail reported by BBC, citing Russian MP Alexander Kinstein, as saying that the four terrorists' passports were found in their getaway car.
Mm.
Okay, maybe, but whenever I hear the passports were found, I'm like, what? What's
well, to get into Ukraine?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, passports and...
Well, it, assuming that's legit, they were found, and that's their passports, it speaks to getaway.
Yeah.
Ukraine.
It's very reminiscent of the attack in Paris 2015, November 2015, I think, in the Bataclan Concert Hall in Paris, claimed again by... Who claimed that one? Al-Qaeda, some kind of jihadis. Don't think it was ISIS. ISIS was around then, yeah. It might have, I don't know if it was ISIS or not. It was some group anyway, but the Bataclan Concert Hall in Paris. I think 90-some people killed in a similar fashion. No fire there, though, at this time. But lots of, if people remember, lots of reports at the time of kind of spotters, let's say, in cars who were identified as being... By eyewitnesses as being, you know, bulky, kind of well-built white guys with blue eyes and short hair on that event. So the thing about this is this event in Russia doesn't make really any sense to me. There's a contradiction or a contrast between the professionalism with which it was carried out, the actual attack. Obviously knew the layout in a lot of detail. They were able to basically collapse the roof, like burn half the building down, which, you know, requires, it's no easy thing to do, you know.
Yeah.
You can go into a large concert hall and take something with you that you're sure is going to burn half the building down and make the roof collapse.
And you're only there 20 minutes.
Yeah. And so many people killed. So there's that professionalism aspect of it, and very detailed, very well planned out, very well carried out, let's say, if you can say that. But then the amateurism of their escape. So obviously we're assuming here this isn't ISIS, this is just a bunch of, you know, this is guns for hire, basically. But their, the amateurish nature of the getaway and the fact that they got caught. They arrive in a white Renault car, and they leave in that same car. You know, I mean, that's not something you do. You have a different car. You have somebody to pick you up or in a different car to take you away. And you also don't all leave in the same car. You also don't all go in the same direction. You split up. You go in different directions. So it was very amateurish. Like, I mean, and then you don't drive... You don't all drive... You know, what was almost 300 kilometers after this attack in the same car that you arrived in all together and drive 300 kilometers in the same car without changing cars. None of that, that's all extremely amateurish. So it brings up the possibility to me that these guys weren't the only ones who were actually doing the shooting.
Mm.
That they were effectively patsies. It's a hallmark of these kind of attacks. We have the patsies who either get arrested or killed, and they're the ones who, the fall guys, basically. They carry the can, and because they're stupid, basically. They're just ignorant people. These four guys are obviously, you know, they're not the sharpest knives in the drawer. They can shoot a gun, but that's about it. But then other people who are
more pros,
you know, because like they even said that these guys were able to, you know, when they left the battle or the Crocus, they blended in with other people. As we were leaving, there were lots of people actually fleeing the scene, so they were able to blend in, whatever. You know, it's not that hard, you know. But so when you blend in with people leaving the scene, why do you all pile into the same car you arrived in and drive 300 kilometres, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And just massively increase the chance that you're going to get caught, you're going to get identified and caught. So these guys, yeah, not the sharpest knife in the drawer, really fit the bill of a bunch of four patsies. And there, you know, it's possible that there were other people involved, more professionally involved in planning it and carrying it out, even, you know.
That might be the six other arrests that they talk about.
Well, yeah, but they haven't released much about those six other arrests or who they are.
Will they? And when this happens in the West, and I put them all in the same category, large-scale mediatized mass shootings or what are reported as terror attacks... Really, there's not much difference between them.
Mm.
in the West, typically it gets whittled down from witnesses saw several guys shooting to one.
Mm-hmm.
Here's his backstory.
Mm-hmm.
Oh shit, the photos don't match. Whatever. Yeah. 48 hours later, here's a better photo. He was alone. He was totally alone. But everyone who was there saw multiple people shooting.
Yeah.
Now Russia doesn't do that. They're going with the four that were caught on camera.
Yeah.
But that's
because those four were on camera.
Right.
And they were the dupes. They're the ones who were to take the fall, right? So they were the dupes to get caught and get pulled up in front of courts and stuff. So, and mistreated and shown to the public as these are the people who did it. Whenever you have other kind of terror attacks where it's like, you know, people saw more than one shooter and then it gets whittled down to one, that's evidence of there being other shooters. There are more professional people now. Yeah, we haven't heard that from in any reports that there were more shooters, but who knows? I don't know.
NBC News reports the U.S. National Security Council said yesterday, that's about 24 hours after the attack, in no uncertain terms that Ukraine had nothing to do with the deadly concert attack.
Mm.
Quote, ISIS bears sole responsibility for this attack. Mm. There was no Ukrainian involvement whatsoever, NSC spokesperson Adrienne Watson said.
Mm.
I love how, after 1.5 years, they've no clue who did Nord Stream.
Mm. ISIS did on Nord Stream, no?
And ISIS, right. And all accusations against Israel are fended off with, well, hang on, an investigation must take place. Genocide, that's a strong word. But they know that over there in Russia, we've seen all the evidence. How do you know? How do you know for certain? It's not been 24 hours. Sure, it was ISIS. But what is ISIS? I saw your tweet about this Russian Muslim mercenary who has an interesting past. He's one of thousands of people like this. You don't need to be Muslim either. I mean, the Tajiks probably were by birth. This is from a couple of years ago. Chechen leader spotted in Bakhmut fighting against Russia. I'm not sure if it includes... Yeah, it does. It's just in the caption there. Scroll down a bit. So, Ahmad al-Kavkaz leader Abdul Hakam al-Shishani pictured in Bakhmut, Ukraine, where he reportedly traveled with 70 fighters from Idlib-governed Syria to fight against Russia. Mm-hmm. So he was Russian Muslim, Free Syrian Army, then ISIS slash the other one, al-Nusra.
Yeah.
And then he's popping up in Ukraine and he's...
In Bakhmut fighting the Russians.
And then there I fighting for democracy, right?
Yeah.
And the beautiful West against... So that's... Literally, it doesn't matter. He's a mercenary. He's just moved from place to place.
Right.
For coin, for money.
Yep. In the pay of...
Whoever will pay more.
Western intel, and obviously in the pay of the Ukrainians, and the Ukrainians are, in, you know, controlled by, say,
now
Western governments.
Whether we hear more about this from Russian government directly, we've heard it before directly from Putin. This is Putin in about 2019 explaining what the fuck ISIS is. Have a listen.
Президент Обама упомянул об одной из угроз, это ИГИЛ. Ну а кто помогал вооружать людей, которые в Сирии боролись с Асадом-то? Кто создавал благоприятный политический информационный климат? Кто подталкивал поставкам оружия? А вы чего, разве вы не понимаете, кто там воюет? Там воюют наемники. В основном. Вы знаете, что там платят деньги. И они воюют там, где платят больше. Вот они вооружились, им платят, ну, определенную сумму. Мне даже называли эти суммы, которые им платят. Они там воюют уже с оружием, все, у них уже не отнимешь. Потом выяснилось, что в другом месте чуть-чуть начали там больше платить. Они там туда перетекут.
Yeah, so Ukraine paid them a little more.
We even know who pays them. So they know. Russians know. But, you know, if it's obviously it's going to be bigger and than just those four guys. But when you find out, what can you do about it? I mean, if it's leading you to a bank in Switzerland, an office in New York, something else in London. It's just the way of the world. It's the way terrorism works. That famous bank, infamous bank that eventually collapsed, the BCCI, it was literally a terrorist funding bank. That's all it did. Well, it also laundered money for the proceeds of cocaine and drugs. But it's notorious. And it was in the 80s and early 90s. And then it collapsed naturally from some financial scandal. And now it's got a Wikipedia page about what it was funding, terrorism and jackals all over the world for a couple of decades. And the CIA went in sometimes, the Mossad went in sometimes. It was like a service. People could just use the bank to hire what they needed to get done. That's been the way of the world since forever.
This was in the Washington Post on December 2023, reported by the Washington Post in December 2023. It's kind of a long article. It basically, title of it is Miscalculations, Divisions, Marked Offensive Planning by U.S. Ukraine. It's just a write-up on what was going on in Ukraine at that time, December 2023. So 3 or 4 months ago, but there's an interesting paragraph in it, and it's the one that I've quoted there. During one visit to Wiesbaden, this is Mark Milley, the former general.
But he's still the chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
Is he still the chairman of the Joint Chiefs? Yeah. Okay, but he's the general of the, you know, he was a ground forces, right? What do you call it? The army.
Army, yeah.
Gentlemen, he spoke with Ukrainian special operation troops who are working with American Green Berets in the hope of inspiring them ahead of operations in enemy-controlled areas. There should be no, this is quoting Milley now, there should be no Russian who goes to sleep without wondering if they're going to get their throat slit in the middle of the night, Milley said, according to an official with foreknowledge of the event. You got to get back there and create a campaign behind the lines. That's just an example of, you know, if you're doubting about what American intent was, military intent, and what their attitude towards it has been for quite a long time towards Ukraine and Russia. It's definitely take the war into Russia.
I think it's clear though that he's implying Russian military, not civilians.
Don't know.
You got to get back there behind the lines, as in the battlefield zone.
Behind the lines.
In the hope of inspiring operations in enemy controlled areas. That's just the best light you can put on it, that he, while not implying, you know, go nuts and start slitting the throat of civilians. Right. One hopes.
I don't know how you'd take that, depending on what he said. It's only a short excerpt of what he's allegedly said,
that's graphic enough, I know. But in a sense, this next one could be darker in its implications, from Newland. Yes, she's been forced to retire early because she, look at her health. This was earlier this year.
Too many Maidan cookies.
It's a long interview, so it's a transcript of an interview she gave with some Washington think tank. If you can search for gosh, I know the word pops up several times. So, generally end, two words. Okay. Interviewer asks, what's your take on the process of negotiations? So they've taken stock of the reality that the war in Ukraine is going to end in some form of negotiated settlement. And she's asked, do you think negotiations are possible now or in the future? And she says something reality-based. She says, well, wars generally end in a negotiation of some kind. But we're not going to pick that moment for Ukraine. Well, yes, they are, but whatever. Ukraine will make those decisions for itself. It needs to. Ukraine needs to be in a strong position, and Putin needs to see that this will just get worse for him before he will move at all at the table. So he needs to be under, like, internal, intense political pressure for the moment when they're happy. As I said, you know, his current offer, Putin's current offer, is I keep what I've got, the four new provinces plus Crimea, and we'll talk about the rest that's currently yours, the rest of Ukraine, and that's not sustainable. But I do think if we can continue to support Ukraine, here she's lobbying for another $60 billion from Congress, if they can have a strong 2024 of asymmetric warfare, Putin will probably wait and see what politics brings him. Couple that with her statement when she spoke to the press when she last flew to Kiev about surprises in store for Putin in 2024. Asymmetric warfare would definitely be
high on the list. Yeah.
High on the list. And that would definitely include slitting the throats of Russian civilians to cause political issues, to have a stronger position, quote unquote, for negotiation. Negotiate a settlement.
Well, this is from the horse's mouth, from the donkey's mouth.
With this money, Ukraine will be able to fight back in the East, but it will also be able to accelerate the asymmetric warfare that has been most effective on the battlefield. And as I said in Kyiv 3 weeks ago, this supplemental funding will ensure Putin faces some nasty surprises on the battlefield.
Mm. She keeps saying, she said battlefield twice there, but where is the battlefield?
Right. For someone like her, it's politics, which means...
No, the battlefield. What's the literal... she's talking about the battlefield, the literal battlefield. So what's her definition of the battlefield? What does it encompass? Of the physical battlefield?
All of Ukraine.
And?
All of Europe.
No, Russia.
Russia, right.
The battle, there's no reason to not to assume that the battlefield she's talking about is stops at the Ukrainian border. Ukraine has been attacking for quite a few months now, attacking inside Russian territory. So there's no reason to assume that her, when she talks about the battlefield, she doesn't mean all of Russia as well.
Right. Do you think she wants to negotiate a settlement of how Russia will be split up?
No, she's just talking about nasty surprises on the battlefield.
Okay.
Which includes all of Russia. So that's what I'm saying.
Right.
She says battlefield twice. People say, oh, she's talking about Ukraine. No, well, I mean, the battlefield isn't limited to Ukraine, obviously, at this point. Not even at this point, before now. There's been multiple attacks on oil refineries and oil depots and drone attacks inside Russia. Clearly, the battlefield is Russia. The US, her and her lackeys, are organizing this war against Russia using the Ukrainian hand. And for quite a long time, over a year now or more, they've expanded the battlefield, clearly expanded the battlefield beyond Ukrainian borders into Russia, because they tried to attack the Red Square. They sent drones to Red Square, to Moscow. They've attacked obviously Belgorod, which is just over the border. That's in Russian territory. They've attacked oil depots and oil refineries, you know, hundreds of miles, thousands of miles into Russia. So the battlefield is obviously inside Russia. And she's talking about nasty surprises on the battlefield, which includes Russia.
Hmm. Right. The US government actually asked Ukraine to stop hitting Russian oil depots this week.
Hmm.
At least publicly, that's what they want. I love how the British government has the gall to warn Russia not to use this attack in Moscow to intensify the war in Ukraine.
Hmm.
It's like, you're the people who, when there's a terrorist attack, use it to justify lobbing missiles in Syria, Bataclan, or invading Iraq, 9/11. I mean, you don't get to use the terrorism for your foreign policy objectives, then hand Russia one of those terrorist attacks, and then say, you now the rules are changed, now you don't get to use it.
Hmm.
how does that work?
Well, I mean, it puts Russia in a difficult position, because if there is some information behind the scenes that this wasn't just limited to these four guys, whatever, but even if it was only at least four or a few other hangers-on, it's very difficult. It sends a message to Russia, and that's what the Brits are they're capitalizing on, the implied threat in saying, "Don't you better not use this to escalate the war in Ukraine," and whatever they mean by that, implies that, because the response to that is, well, or what? Or you'll get more.
Oh, right. Right.
So
take this as a warning.
There'll be more, you know, and we have the ability to, you know, we can activate or we can send these kind of nutbag guns for hire, you know, low-level human scum, basically, who'll just shoot and kill anybody for a few dollars. We can send them anywhere in Russia. Russia's a big country. You can't have eyes on everywhere. We can have these kind of events anywhere in Russia. And how many are you willing to take before, you know, things get unbearable in a certain sense for you or for your people? You know, so this is what they've stooped to, basically. I mean, it's kind of like a dirty, and you know, it's obviously it was never a fair fight. The West operates by deception, much like the Mossad, and asymmetric warfare, dirty tricks. Black ops, underhanded tactics. They don't fight fair, basically. And this is what they resort to always when they're faced with the tide turning against them. Whenever things aren't looking good for their side, for their aims in Ukraine, and they're not right now, they resort to, you know, it's just kind of like having a boxing match, and you know, you're meant to have a boxing match, a fair fight type thing, and then your opponent, you know, kicks you in the balls. It's like, and then says, ISIS did it. ISIS kicked you in the balls. It wasn't me. Whatever. Oh, something happened to your balls. I don't know. Somebody kicked you in the balls. It wasn't me.
Well, it's like, no, but the Russian, the opponent responds and says, ah, so kicking in the balls is allowed. No, no, no. Mm. No, no, the rules are you can't, but no, you just have to me.
You have to keep fighting fair.
Didn't.
That wasn't me. That was ISIS.
Yeah.
That was something just flew into the ring and hit you in the balls. It wasn't me.
Well, there they are warning Russia not to escalate. And then the night of last night, so 24 hours later, Crimea was absolutely hammered. Relatively, it got a lot of airstrikes.
Attempted. I mean,
they've had... No.
A few, right, but...
Have a look at this. There were several hits in Sevastopol.
Mm-hmm.
It only resulted in one person dying, but...
Mm-hmm. I just hit downtown Sevastopol, down in the middle of the town. Like,
it wasn't well targeted at something particular.
It was just against the middle of the town,
right?
Maybe it was a target, whatever. But obviously,
So terrorism rather than actual.
What have they been doing? You know, in the Donbass and Donetsk for like 10 years now, they've been shelling civilians in the Donbass. That's what they do. You know.
All the way though through the week, but before and after, the Russian side has massively intensified airstrikes in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
The night before the mass shooting, huge waves of strikes with footage of hypersonic missile strikes against Kiev, Kharkiv, and US launchers probably just behind the actual front line. And then including this, the strike on the power plant at the Dnipro Dam. I think this signals that Russia is going for properly de-energizing Ukraine now. You remember, well, let's play it first.
It's a cruise missile there.
Сколько сейчас буду
прятать? And it's gone. Well, it's not gone. They didn't actually smash the dam, causing a flood, unlike the other side. But it's interesting, that dam is at the north end of the Dnipro Reservoir, the Kharkova Dam is at the south end. That's the one that gave way and flooded Kherson after being repeatedly hit with Ukrainian/CIA HIMARS. But they did knock out the power plant there, and Ukrainians are worried about what kind of energy systems they have left, because that was a big one. Power plants in Kharkov were hit again. And then last night, so this one was the night of the terror attacks, so 48 hours ago. Then last night, another wave of strikes, including like 20 strikes alone on the western city of Lvov, also hitting power plants, among other things. So, yeah, it's just, it is escalating, and it has been before the terror attack. I also thought it was interesting that it's not the first time they've said this, but it's the first time the Western media has noticed it, that the Kremlin has admitted that Russia is in a state of war for the first time.
Peskov said that just a day before.
He said, de jure, it is a special military operation, but de facto, it has turned into a war. What was this you posted about Putin signing something into law yesterday? You wrote that it specifies the mechanism for exempting participants of the SMO from criminal liability. Russians or Ukrainians?
Russians. Obviously. You're not going to exempt the Ukrainians from any criminal liability. You're going to impose criminal liability on them.
Right. So kind of like another signal that the gloves are coming off. They slip down the wrist.
It happened that same day, but it could be related to, obviously there's various applications, whatever, but one of the nut job guys that were caught had one of the Russian guys who caught him, it was one of the Chechens, whatever, who caught him, cut part of his ear off and tried to force him to eat it. So it was, I don't know if it was after that or it was directly related to that, just saying, okay, we're not going to, because that video was shared fairly widely, that would absolve that person of any liability, that was any criminal act, but it could be, obviously, if it applies to everybody in the SMO, then it's, it means Ukrainian prisoner of war probably won't be prisoner of war anymore. They'll just be shot. It could also apply, it may apply to the Ukrainian, other government officials, etc., whatever, it depends on what the laws are, what laws may have been up until now in place in Russia, where members of the Russian military are governed by a set of rules, what they can and can't do. And basically it seems that Putin has just signed a law saying that they're exempt from any prosecution. So,
which would bring them into line with US standards.
Well, not officially, but...
Okay.
It's kind of saying the gloves are off in a certain sense, and they're not going to be constrained. It's just a indication that they're... that after this event of Friday night, that they're not going to be constrained by international law, let's say, that the US, that their enemy, the US and the West, don't adhere to anyway. So,
right. Just before all this, we learned that Elon Musk his Starlink has been launching satellites into space in the hundreds for the Pentagon since 2020. That's not good. That's not good at all. Obviously, you're not supposed to have weapons in space, but the ban on it's called the 1967 Outer Space Treaty is pretty clear. You're also not supposed to use space for war, period. But, we all know everyone has military satellites up there, or at least dual use satellites. And it sort of quietly emerged that not only is it happening, it's been happening for 4 years, predating, quote unquote, Putin's invasion of Ukraine. I think there are horses that's in the hundreds, but then they're probably small little things. But you know, Musk's Starlink is
it's
about saturating low orbit with.
It's basically military Starlink. So yeah, I mean, Musk made a big. It's kind of stupid. It's a bit cynical, I suppose. He made a big deal about but not providing, not allowing Starlink to be used by the Ukrainian military there last year, I think it was, because it was dangerous, whatever, blah blah. But it's obviously his a military version of Starlink is being used, has been used for quite a long time by the US military to pursue the war in Ukraine anyway. So it's kind of like splitting hairs in a certain sense, you know.
Yeah. More Western hypocrisy.
Well, he needs the money, so, and that's how he gets a bit of a free pass on Twitter as well. You know, he insures himself from all sorts of probably all sorts of phony court cases and all sorts of different the six ways from Sunday that the intel agencies have of getting back at you that hasn't applied it to Elon Musk and Twitter or X, but Elon Musk specifically the person so far, because he is useful to the military industrial complex in the US. So he figures, well, that's my insurance policy. I mean, you got to do a trade for if you want to have free speech. The kind of the level, I suppose, that we have free speech on X, then you got to pay for that by paying the piper. So,
are we going to see Russia knock out US satellites this year?
You're going to see it?
Yeah, you're going to see,
somebody's going to film it.
Film it, or somebody's going to say, "Oh gosh, a meteor!" No,
it'd be hard to,
warned in late 22, after it started. Shoigu said, "We can target your commercial satellites," and that was just left like that in Western headlines. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, the Russians! Why would they do that? Well, he explained why. It's because your commercial satellites are dual use,
right? Yeah, there's all sorts of different. There's all sorts of a lot of different ways the whole thing can escalate. And one aspect of this attack on this dirty atrocity on Friday, carried out by the West directly or indirectly, is that it may be an attempt to provoke. I mean, maybe they're stupid enough to think that they could provoke Putin, or could, you know, by carrying out this attack, they could use Russian public opinion pressure on Putin to do something more, to escalate in some way or whatever, that then would, you know, serve to escalate the conflict beyond what it has been to date. Because if there's one thing, the dominant clique in the deep state in the US and Washington establishment, if there's one thing they would really like to see, is it's an expanded war. This conflict in Ukraine being expanding beyond the borders of Ukraine westwards into Europe, because they would love to see another conflict of some description. Of course, they don't really care if it gets out of hand or whatever, but they figure they'll be able to control it. But they'd like to see it expand into Europe, because the Americans love European theater wars, you know, because they can generally, for the most part, stay out of them, as they did in the last major one, which is World War II, just send a lot of weapons and bankrupt a lot of economies and then come in and sweep up all the goods, you know.
World War One as well.
They can emerge victorious they have emerged victorious on those two occasions in the past from European theatre, as they call it, wars. So I'm sure it's high on their list of having another one, you know. We're going to do the same again. That'll put pay to this multipolar world if we can wreck Europe and bring down Russia and anybody else who gets involved in the process. So, yeah, but I like to think that Putin would be aware of that and wouldn't take any precipitous action, but will simply, as hard as it is not to respond in a controlled way and in the most efficient and effective way, and not sacrifice any plans or the, you know, the process that has been ongoing since March in 2022, for 2 years, to not mess that up at this point, you know. But But this is just, this is an attempt, really. One aspect of it is an attempt to mess that up, you know, to try and ruin Russia's party, basically, in a certain sense, you know. I mean, they had nothing. Russia had no, obviously. I mean, obviously, we don't even need to talk about the allegations of the Ukrainians have made that this was, you know, an inside job type thing, you know, that it was, that Putin did it, carried it out, or the Russian intelligence carried it out themselves in order to give Russia, which is bizarro alternate upside down world reality from what I just said, where the idea is that Putin needed extra motivation or extra political capital, let's say, to expand the war, to do more, or carry out more attacks on Ukraine. This bizarre, he obviously didn't need that. He's on the back of a landslide victory in the elections last week, and the vast majority of the Russian people support the way he's been conducting the SMO, and it's going well for them. You know, Congress has stalled on more aid to Ukraine. Ukrainians are on the back foot. It's all going very well. The idea that you would then like have some of your agents go in and massacre a bunch of Russians, and as CNN said, you know, throw the country into what do they call it, carnage and disarray or something, is just ridiculous. So you can discount that.
Yeah,
idea. The other suggestion that it was,
it's the opposite of anything.
Yeah,
Putin's the only thing holding Russia back from going massive.
Yeah, yeah. Although, but that
he's
brings
under
up
pressure,
but that brings too up the idea that it might be an attempt to do that itself. Right. You know, this is the Ukrainian narrative, basically, right, that they, you know, they obviously they're not spinning in that way, where it's obviously they're saying it's an inside job by Russia because Putin wanted to use it for justification to attack Ukraine even more, to beat up on Ukraine even more. When obviously he didn't need that justification at all. He had all the justification he needed and things were going pretty well. So you can discount that idea that it was an inside job. You can discount the idea that it was ISIS for the reasons we gave, which is these guys obviously aren't jihadis, aren't religious at all. They were very amateurish, and why would ISIS want to attack Russia at this particular point in time anyway, or at all? You know, have they completely forgotten about Israel and what's been going on in Gaza? I mean, or is ISIS not Muslim? Does ISIS care about Palestinians? I don't know. It's hard to say. ISIS like Israel? Is Israel ISIS? I don't know. Anyway, it's just weird that ISIS never bothered with Israel,
yeah,
right? But they go and they attack, you know, go all the way over to, from their bases in Syria, let's say, the only real significant base they have, or some ISIS-type groups have left, is in little enclaves in Syria. And instead of right there, Israel, you know, Tel Aviv, maybe concert hall in Tel Aviv, who know, you know, got these guys who want to do it, surely there'd be a bit of motivation to that. No, let's go to Moscow and do it there.
They all sit around and they go, you know, guys, the election's not going well for Biden, and it's gone too well for Putin. Mm. What can we do?
Yeah.
I know. Let's go to Moscow.
I know. In the name of Allah, let's go to Moscow and let's go to the country that actually is probably the most tolerant of Muslims. A Western country that's most tolerant of all of them, of Muslims, and let's go and kill some people there. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. So obviously not some kind of jihadi, ISIS-inspired attack at all. So then what are you left with? Well, you're left with the context in which this happened, which is a Western war against Russia and all the things we've just said, which is, you know, the Western politicians even openly talking about asymmetric warfare behind Russian lines and giving nasty surprises to Putin. I mean, it's amazing to me that anybody would need to explain this to them.
Yeah,
this explained to them in this way. Maybe, and I'm not saying that's not the case. Obviously, a lot of people do, because a lot of people's heads are up their bums, right? Because of the way the media encourages them to shove their heads up their own backsides, but. Or the media does it for them, the Western media, but it's just still crazy, like, because if you could just stop listening to the media for a minute and just look at this event in context, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, that's it, you know what I mean? And that's not a biased analysis of it, that's pure, like, and you know, I'll allow myself to say that that's an objective analysis of the situation. You know what I mean?
It's the U.S. has stated explicitly, we seek the strategic defeat of Russia.
Yeah.
Ergo. So,
yeah. I mean, it happened. In the context of a war by the West against Russia. What more do you?
Yeah, exactly.
Who do you look to first?
I think most skeptics are definitely, they know something's up. What I'm observing is that they spend a lot of time going, well, hold on, we don't know any data yet. You know, was it ISIS? Was it Ukraine?
We don't know. They were full on with the ISIS, did it from the get go.
Oh, the media. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean the skeptics.
Okay,
you know, I've seen a lot of them in the last 40 hours be like, well, hang on a second, don't be jumping to conclusions. We can't. It's a bit early to tell. You know, come on. But they're positioning themselves to be judicious about it, which is cool in general. That's definitely what you should do. But they don't want to jump to conclusions as to how exactly, what route through which the blob, obviously Western intelligence agencies, doesn't matter exactly who, came through and did this to Russia. Because that's what happened. That's only important. Whether it was cloaked in ISIS and came through Ukraine, or whether it came through Central Asia on behalf of agents, it's kind of like, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? That's just the method, the exact method. But the source, obviously, leads back to the West.
Well, they were heading towards the Russian border, or the Ukrainian border.
Yeah. It's like, but they would have all come, likely, from Central Asia, Tajikistan.
Yeah. Well, they probably...
Well, they lived in Russia already.
Yeah. Well, probably, yeah, Tajikistan, or maybe they'd been in Russia for a while, yeah. But it was probably in... All these cells there waiting, ready to go type thing. You know?
Apparently it's a big problem in Russia. In the same way they have migration issues in Europe and North America. In Russia they have, even during these last 2 years, they have a lax migration policy for the same basic economic reasons.
Mm.
Cheap labor.
Mm.
There are powerful capitalist interests in Russia that want to keep it that way. Versus the much more conservative, close the damn borders, you know, and that's a similar issue. It's people coming from Central Asia up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a pretty dirty move. Like, that's, it's this deep state, if you want to call it that, or whatever, they, them, behind the scenes type thing, who engage in these kind of tactics, and they're pretty evil because, you know, they've done it in many different countries over the past 20 some years, primarily since 9/11, before that as well, but particularly since 9/11. And it's one of those things where you've no one to strike back against. It's veiled in a kind of cloak. You've got some patsies, whatever, and the real people who did it or carried it out are nowhere to be seen. You can't actually attack them. They're ghosts, basically. And it just seems like it's just terrorism, right?
It just sprang up.
Just rampant, random terrorism just attacked you, you know, and it makes you suddenly focus internally on your problems, internally into the country, right? It has that effect of focusing you inward and adopting all sorts of security measures. And when governments get wind of or get an idea, and they all do get an idea that this was not who they officially say it was, or the official claim of who it was, it wasn't ISIS, it wasn't Al-Qaeda, it was someone else. We have the evidence that we're not releasing to the public that there was more going on here. Suddenly they realize that they've got a fifth column within their country who can carry out these kind of attacks, who can act in this way with impunity, and they can even, you know, maybe take out the heads of state or, you know, in different ways. So it immediately makes them afraid and makes them ready to play ball with whatever agenda that deep state wants them to play ball with. They'll have a harder time doing that in Russia, I think, because Putin and the Russians are well aware of this modus operandi and stuff. And I think they have a well-informed enough population to insulate them against any potential, you know, public opinion fallout from it, you know, where it would turn against the government. I don't think that's going to happen. So this was really a Pyrrhic victory in that respect, you know what I mean? it's not really going to achieve what they want to achieve, and it may end up hastening the demise of their little plot, or their little game that they're playing in Ukraine.
Yeah. And that is quickening. Ukraine is definitely quickening. Watch this space any month now.
Any month now.
We've been saying for 2 years, but they got nothing left. Very little left. That's hence, you know, we heard Macron going on and on about sending NATO troops there. Obviously, that's, you know, still, it's just they'll talk, but it's persistent talk, you know. He was joined last week by the Czech president, who said NATO troops in Ukraine doesn't mean they're at war with Russia, so long as they're not directly engaged in battle.
You mean this?
You want to try that theory out?
You mean this Putin? Are this Macron?
Which one?
This one. That was a bunch of memes were spun off.
A
photo released of that was taken by the presidential photographer, a woman who's been the presidential photographer for a while in France, and she took a picture of Macron, and she apparently just released this one during the week there, where Macron was in, and this is after, on the heels of Macron saying, "I'm going to get Putin and send troops to Putin." Click on the left one there. So this is the picture that they released, and it's a new Macron, a new macho, angry, "I'm going to get that Putin" type Macron. But then a bunch of memes were spun off this, because it was a bad idea, you know, because everybody knows Macron's gay, and he's like, you know, in more ways than one. So it was a pathetic attempt to present this image of him as this strong man when he's not a strong man at all, and he's just full of bluff and bluster, effectively. Of course, that doesn't mean he won't send troops to Ukraine, but he won't be going to Ukraine himself, obviously. But then, so that spun off that little Playmobil version that took his picture. And the one, if you just click the right there, the other one, then claimed to show what was actually going on in that picture, and that's him down the bottom there.
You see, it's important people to see things in their full context.
Yeah.
You know? The media will zoom in on things, and you'll think that's the thing, but it's,
you got to look.
You got to take a step back, and
there's also
we're laughing at it. But my God, the media
also this one.
It's just playing Ukrainian war games.
Yeah, and then playing Ukrainian war games in the toilet. And then there was this one about them going to Moscow. That's the scene of the march to Moscow.
Okay, boys, let's go.
Let's go to Moscow.
Justin Trudeau would be like right there with them. Hang on, wait for me. We're mocking it, but this is the British media's write-up of the Macron new look photo shoot.
Mm-hmm.
The Telegraph link.
Yeah.
Absolutely not a hint of irony or nothing in this article, right? Headline, Macron boxing pictures show, quote, ultimate virility.
Yeah, of course they do.
Byline, with muscles bulging and his teeth clenched, the president looks like a real warrior, says French media. Now, yeah. The British will say, we're only reporting at arm's length here. It was the French media, not us. Whatever. Scroll down, we'll have some more of the adjectives they used. Intimate portraits of Macron boxing. Ultimate show of virility.
They showed him with bulging biceps as he struck the bag with gritted teeth and veins protruding. He could have been fighting against Putin.
And look, this is what struck me about this. In the fourth paragraph, they conveyed a message of ultimate virility that brought to mind those of a bare-chested Vladimir Putin practicing judo riding a horse. Here's the thing. When that happened 10 and 15 years ago, Western media was like shitting all over it. Oh, God, that's such a crass. Oh, God, we can see what he's doing. He's trying to manipulate people he's obviously stage managed those photos. Whereas, in fact, he was just on holidays in Siberia and it was hot. Opportunistic, maybe, but Putin didn't like, okay, stand over there and I'll pose here and then you take, of course not. But the double standards are like, we'll mock it as a cheap political PR And then eventually, 10 and 15 years later, we'll copy it.
Yeah.
But you know what they say? Imitation is the highest
form of flattery.
Form of flattery, so.
Well, the definition is ultimate virility. The definition of virility is, in a man, is the quality of having strength, energy, and a strong sex drive. Right? That's the definition of virility. Mm-hmm. Quality of having strength, energy, and a strong sex drive. So they wanted to convey that about Macron. Now, you know, the most relevant picture we have is this one of that last sex drive thing. There's a lot of virility going on there, for sure, man. I can feel the virility.
He's never going to live that down. That was like,
I don't think he should.
It was 5 years ago or something.
Yeah.
And the two guys apparently were like criminals.
Yeah.
He didn't care. But there's another one where he looks super happy about it.
Yeah. That's that one there you're talking about. And then there's... these are the best pictures ever. I mean, nobody should... These pictures should always be... should be kept. They should be put in the presidential archive. You know what I'm saying? The defining pictures of... there's another one there I just sent to Scotty. Awesome. That virility in that picture is just knocking me... just blowing me away here. So, obviously he's got a lot to make up for, and it's going to take a lot of picture photos of him punching a bag to change the minds of, at least of the population of France, who overwhelmingly, you know, are aware that Macron is a closet homosexual. And there's lots of questions as well about that. Do we talk about that? But Brigitte Macron, her true nature and all that kind of stuff. So it's all pretty sad.
We mentioned it, but there's been an update. Macron has issued a formal denial. My wife is not a man.
Hmm. Okay, when you have to say that, you got problems, dude.
And you know, I don't know.
What you should never find yourself in a position. I mean, just as a, like, you know, life hack type of thing.
Yeah.
A bit of advice for all the ages. You know, strive to never find yourself in the position where you have to publicly tell an entire country, you know, look, everybody, my wife is not a man. Please stop saying that. Just don't find yourself in that position, because if something's gone wrong a long time beforehand, when you find yourself having to make that kind of a public statement, there's stuff you should have done way before to prevent that from happening, and it's too late now. Sorry.
This is in the news again because it took off in the US for the first time, thanks in part to Candace Owens.
Mm.
Bring it to Americans' attention, and she said she'd stake her reputation on it or something. This is real, right? This is the biggest political scandal ever. I'm not sure about it yet. We're on the fence about it, but I did some digging, and it's really strange that when you see media reports about it, they cast it aside and they say en passant that Brigitte Macron won a defamation case. Case closed. It was already sorted. You know, the two original women who wrote what's now a book-length investigation series, they were found guilty of defamation. That's case closed. No, that's not what happened. They lost a defamation case brought by the three children of Brigitte, who they claimed were actually sired by someone else, and then sort of adopted by Brigitte Macron.
Right.
And they won a case. So, okay, well, at least they won something, right? Well, yes and no. On appeal, they had their fines massively reduced. They ended up paying several hundred euros. There was no prison sentence. No, they didn't stop them. Their website's still up and so on. And it was actually specifically for misuse of images. It was very kind of weak. It wasn't really... apparently, the judge in the appeal said, I'm reducing the fines. And by the way, Brigitte Macron... oh, that was a separate case. In some other case, Brigitte Macron was told expressly to bring an actual defamation case because she had done something else regarding misuse of images and stuff. not because they'd altered them, but they'd, you know, enhanced them, altered them to change, you know, to misrepresent them, but they'd enhanced them and zoomed in on features and stuff like that. And so the judge told her to go away and bring an actual defamation suit. I'm like, you mean there hasn't been one yet?
Hmm.
There hasn't. And the next, there is a defamation suit. Apparently it's been filed. It won't be heard until March 2025.
Hmm.
So that means since 2021, when the story first broke, it'll have been 4 years before the president of France, who will have been president 8 years by that point, his wife finally has a case, a defamation case heard. That's the strangest tell in this whole thing. I don't know whether she's whatever.
You think if
that legal thing, you would think the president, that's going to be slam dunk. Yeah. Immediately.
If it was an outlandish claim, it would immediately be shot down, you know, and the president would get the preferential treatment in that sense and go through the courts and get it shut down. But it hasn't happened, and that just makes people all the more suspicious, you know. So, yeah, there's something very, very, very strange going there. It's similar with Obama and Michelle, you know, Big Mike, as they call him.
Yeah. It's weird how that happened, sort of simultaneously on both sides of the Atlantic. Because I always thought when he came along, he's definitely Europe's answer to Macron, to Obama, you know? You had that impression about him. Here I am, suave, slick. I'm the anti-establishment candidate, hope and change. And there was always something off about it.
Sleazy creep.
He is serious, by the way, about troops in Ukraine.
Macron?
I know you're going to say, yeah, but it's not seriously going to happen. And I agree with you. I do. The French media, nighttime news like LCI and TF1 and stuff, putting out maps of Ukraine, and they're talking to retired generals who are now getting paid to tell the media about how it'll work.
Mm.
They've got maps of Ukraine and we'll put 3,000 troops there, 4,000 there.
Yeah.
I mean...
But that's all. I mean, people shouldn't say that. I mean, there's obviously danger in that happening, but the last time we were on, what's most interesting to me about that is what it points to in terms of the overall progression of the war and the assessment of the state of the current state of the conflict by Western powers, that putting troops when they're willing or they're talking about putting actual NATO troops in certain areas of Ukraine, that all says to me that they're trying to establish a de facto
partition
line.
Yes, and they're banking which means on
they're
the Russians
preparing for partition. They're preparing for significant Russian
movement across the Dnieper.
Significant Russian advances and taking of various towns and that kind of stuff, because Ukraine, it's coming to an end basically, and they want to partition it at some point, and they assume that if they can put NATO troops flying under NATO, you know, national colours, French, probably Baltic, Polish, Romanian, who, you know, under NATO flag, that the Russians will take that as we won't directly engage with those people as long as they don't directly engage with us, and that'll be the end of it.
We've had a statement though from some guy high up in the Duma, Tolstoy, great something grandson of the Leo Tolstoy. He's fluent in French. I think he's former ambassador to France or something like that. Interviewed by French media. And he told them in no uncertain terms, also widely reported in France this week, that the moment, we don't give a shit. He says, on s'en fout. Mm-hmm. We don't care. The moment a French troop of any, whether they're mercenaries or under official French flag, cross into Ukraine, they're dead.
Mm. So, well, I mean, that's a certain
amount of... Is that
amount of
just fighting talk as well?
A certain amount of hyperbole. They're like, it's, I think... That would be the case, obviously, you have to make the distinction here about sending troops to Ukraine and them actively engaging in the current and 2 years long now battle along with Ukrainian soldiers against Russian troops in the special military operation, quote unquote, that has been ongoing for 2 years. So that's a different proposition from putting some French troops, putting 2,000 French troops and 2,000 German troops or 2,000 Polish troops in specific areas well behind the actual front lines in Ukraine. That's two totally different scenarios. Doesn't mean they won't necessarily be attacked, but they're not flying to the active front line and immediately starting to engage. If they did that, obviously it's a no-brainer that they would be targeted. They're just like,
so you're making the same distinction the Czech president made this week when he said NATO troops in Ukraine does not mean they're at war with Russia, so long as they're not directly engaged in battles.
Yeah,
they can cross into Ukraine, and
of course, but they're there already.
Yes, but yeah. But
they have been there. Not officially.
They're there as mercenaries.
Not flying their flag and having their pictures taken and stuff.
Bunks are being blown up.
Yeah.
In Kharkov, yeah. Lvov, but wherever.
The official troops under official French flag or whatever European nation flag would
change
not,
the calculus
would
for the
not,
Russians.
Would not put themselves at that risk. They're not going to the front line. Like. That's the point. Okay. It doesn't mean the Russians might not decide to target them or whatever, but they would probably think twice about it.
Okay.
Like I said, it's most likely an indication of a desire on the part of NATO to establish a de facto, they hope, on the ground partition line. We're putting them in these areas. The question then comes is whether or not Russia would be willing to accept that de facto partition line. Where those troops are. If they're not, then they might attack them.
Right.
So it's all being thought about very carefully right now by both sides, particularly in France and in NATO countries. NATO countries, they're all thinking about it very carefully, about where they should actually put these troops. Because, yeah, like that guy said, actually, you know, the French government doesn't want any body bags coming home covered in a French tricolour, you know. They don't want to see that either. So, of course, there are people in Washington, D.C. who would love to see that. So, it's a delicate operation. This is something... if you ever want to get a bunch of retweets or but a bunch of attention on Twitter, post something that's a bit inflammatory, but also not just like throwing shade, but, you know, just making a simple, apparently factual statement about that undermines the entire rationale of Ukraine. I posted this during the week there, a map of a breakdown of possible future settlement, let's say. And I just said, here's the best offer Ukraine's going to get. Take it soon or accept even less later. So the red is Russian sovereign territory on the right. And that far left, light blue, is Ukrainian sovereign territory. So the light blue is basically what's left of Ukraine. And then in between you have demilitarized territory and autonomous. Basically a demilitarized zone, a buffer zone. So on the right you have red, you have Russian. Or is that maroon? I don't know. It's probably maroon or burgundy. On the right, in the burgundy, you have Russia. That's the Russia part of Ukraine Russia would take and incorporate into Russia. On the left, you would have a rump state of Ukraine in the seafoam, in the eggshell blue, robin's egg blue. And
just a quick point, by the way, Russia extends further south. For some reason, they didn't color in Sochi. It's all white, as if it's a different country. No.
No, yeah, yeah.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so, and then that, like that really, this was Medvedev kind of more or less proposed something along these lines, and it got a bunch of views, 330,000, but it got 567 comments, and pretty much all of them were NAFO, and then look at the first comment underneath. You are on the list. That's the head of the. That's the CIA's, special.
Yeah, special bag boy.
Special bag boy in Ukraine, the head of the Ukrainian intelligence.
Which the New York Times literally announced in a special report 2 weeks ago that he was handpicked by the CIA.
Yeah. So he's CIA man. He's apparently putting him on the list. But anyway, so I got loads of comments, and it's all just...
You got NAFO'd.
It's all these NAFO troll dudes, and it's kind of hilarious. And I've had a few others, but an example of... I just saw one just now, actually, of the kind of typical NAFO person check this out. This is someone who's been commenting on some of my posts. So Canadian, I suppose Canadian then. So somebody living in Canada supports Ukraine and Israel because of the flags.
Right.
Charmaine Miao, NAFO Cats Division. So that's the North Atlantic Fellow Organization, Cats Division. Queen and top comrade. Pronouns are furry and pussy. High priestess for gay satanic rituals at Dread NAFO. Your mom, fella CT6.
Location, your mom, Langley.
Yes. But post serious stuff, like, you know, the pinned post at the top there is things that matter. Mariupol, Ukrainian POWs, Kharkov Dam, Odessa, kidnapped Ukrainian children, failure to provide Ukraine with adequate aid. You know, postings like serious, you know, Western talking points, you know what I mean? Like, not, it's not a parody account, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
In that sense.
Like, oh, no, they're very serious.
But their bios are parody.
Yeah.
Appear to be parody, but probably not. Especially, probably at least not for the high priestess for gay satanic rituals.
No, they're pedophiles.
Probably.
It's a pedo network.
So that's just a sense. So, you know, life hack for attention on Twitter is post something inflammatory about Ukraine that undermines the entire Western narrative on Ukraine. And but the downside is you'll get a bunch of satanic pedo type NAFO, you know, godless faggy Western liberals inundating your Twitter feed. So I'm not sure it's worth it. I wouldn't recommend it.
Not often.
You can't, just don't look at it.
Here and there. Here and there.
So speaking of famous people who have gone missing and stuff like that, were we talking about people? No, speaking about famous people or famous politicians or notable political or social figures who, there's some strange things about them. Strange things have come up. Strange things.
It's a long list.
Well, most recently, obviously, we should probably just mention something about Kate and William. Give us your.
Jesus! You want some royal watching? No problem.
No, I don't want. Just give us your and your probably very 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 dodgy hot take on what's happening. Give us your super conspiracy hot take.
It's been 2 weeks since we were here. So last week's news was that they released. The Sun published. And all the usual media heads like Piers Morgan and stuff cited as factual. Here's footage of Kate with William. He's wearing a baseball cap. She's in sports attire. They've gone shopping in some farm shop. And it's video footage. 5-6 seconds. There you go. That's her. Mm. You zoom in and it's not her.
Mm.
It's not. There's no, like, you know, there's no room for doubt there. It's not Kate Middleton.
Mm.
That was last week.
Mm.
Really weird. And then this week, finally, signs of life. That does indeed appear to be her sitting on a bench in a garden saying that she has some sort of cancer. Didn't say what it was, but presumably it's bad news. Shit, it would be bad news for anyone. She's only about 42. She's got 3 kids. I have sympathy for her. You know, I'm not like, I haven't been, you know, there's been some wild conspiracy theories about it. But of course there's silence. There's 3 months of silence. She hasn't been seen since Christmas Day. You know, that's always going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
What's weird about this is that her story about how some form of cancer was discovered in the course of a surgery for something else, abdominal surgery,
mm-hmm.
took place during the same week in January that her father-in-law, the King Charles, had more or less the same thing happen to him. He was having routine surgery for something benign, probably prostate, and they discovered cancer, probably bladder or somewhere down there, right? Mm-hmm. The same week. That's nuts. But it doesn't even end there. It turns out that just before them, in December, another royal, ex-wife of Prince Andrew, Sarah Ferguson, also got cancer. So within the space of a few weeks, 3 of them got cancer.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably all there is to it.
Well, the video of them walking, William and, I suppose, allegedly Kate walking at the farm shop, whatever, near their house, that was some guy who filmed it and said this was...
Mm-hmm.
and then gave it to the media, and the media just ran with it. But it's like no one no one stopped to say, "Hang on a minute, that's not Kate." But also, well, everybody stopped to say that's not, that doesn't look like her at all. But no one said, no one added on the reasonable addition to that statement, which is, and no one said it was. No one claimed it was. So the whole thing was like, for me, was a big furor over nothing. And it's like, dude, it's like, stop pointing, you don't need to point the fingers at the Windsors.
No.
You all got it wrong. No one claimed that was Kate. That's William walking with some girl who looks a bit like Kate. Some friend of hers, some friend of his, some friend of the family. Well, then and someone mistook her, the guy who took the video mistook her Kate. And then the media ran. Well, it's the media's fault as well for being a bunch of assholes, which they are.
Yeah, but we know since COVID that the media is, the government is.
No, I think the media just do it for clickbait, like, they'd be all over it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think it was, I don't think they're that stupid where they would put someone who's obviously in their 20s out with William and try and pass it off as this is Kate. Without having, I mean, they're not that stupid, right? Without realizing that this is just going to blow up on our faces. It's ridiculous. No one's going to believe that's Kate. And yeah, lo and behold, immediately no one believed it was Kate. And then accused the government or the Windsors of trying to portray this as Kate. And they're going, what are you talking about? We didn't portray anything as anything. It's y'all that did that. That's just my
okay.
Take on.
But anyway, the real scandal here is that three of them have cancer, and obviously it's a result of the thing, and that's why the Crown was so sensitive about it,
mm-hmm.
because it's the thing that caused this.
Mm-hmm.
So they're three, plus you wonder about the Queen before them.
Yeah,
you know, that's why they I think they're so. They've made an absolute foobar out of it, being so secretive.
I think people are just grasping stuff. There's another video. There's another picture. I mean, do we have the? You don't have the pictures, do you?
No, I didn't think it would be that much of a
that much of a
topic of interest.
So this is. People did some AI nonsense on or whatever, but anyway, there's this one. So just to show what we're talking about here, there's one more after this. Two that came out. I mean, this is effectively. You have to scroll down to look at that one, Scotty. So that's the video that everybody's like, that's not her. That's definitely not Kate. And then there's. There was that one, and then there was that came out. You know, I think that one came later, but then this one was previous. And they claimed this was Kate. The media claimed this was Kate Middleton as well. Not it may be, but maybe not. Or again. See, the thing is, Kate Middleton was spotted on Monday for the first time since December. She continues to rest in private. The pictures obtained by the Post, that's all they say, sat in the passenger seat of an Audi. It's obviously some person, some photographer, some royal watcher. And if you go down to the picture, yeah, somebody's just taken that picture from the video, or they're still from the video, or taken the video, and claimed it was Kate, you know? So it looks, to me, it looks more like her sister, Pippa Middleton. Anyway, so there's that, and then the previous video you just saw of the two of them walking together, and that people got all worked up about, you know, decided that this was fakery and all this kind of stuff, and literally like there's silence from the people who are allegedly in this video or in these pictures about whether or not that's them in the pictures. They don't say anything. They don't come out and say that's not me in that picture. That was a friend of ours. It wasn't me, and that's my sister. They don't say anything, and I don't know why they have the secrecy thing. But what I'm saying is, it was all auto generated, and I'm not saying it was without reason, because, like you said, there's just been this silence after an operation and maybe getting some kind of diagnosis, and there's silence. You don't see her for 3 months and all this kind of stuff, and people work it all up. But in terms of the allegations that are this spinning that into attempted deceit by the government or the House of Windsor or whatever, the royal family, is for me is a bit of a stretch because they literally didn't say anything. I don't know if they attempt that, but they're pretty bad attempts. And I don't imagine they're that stupid that they would attempt to pass off people who really don't look like Kate Middleton as Kate Middleton. I don't think they would attempt to do that. So that's why I think all the furor around these pictures and the speculation stuff is not that. It's not actually any conscious attempt or an attempt at all by them to pass off people who aren't Kate Middleton as Kate Middleton. Because it would just be stupid. It would foreseeably, very foreseeably, result in what it has resulted in, which is not good for the royal family at all, I don't think. And then, they posted a video of her a few days ago, looking like herself, and talking about her cancer diagnosis and giving more details. And so she's provoked. They're provoked to do that as a result of all this. Do you know what I mean? So, given that she is able to sit in front of a camera and tell people what's going on, it doesn't make any sense why they would have tried to cover it up a week beforehand.
Yeah, totally. I agree. Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is the dominant narrative is that there's a big cover-up that they have been trying to pass off fake pictures. You know, consciously, the House of Windsor has been trying to pass off fake pictures as real. And I don't see any evidence for that.
No, it's the silence. It's the radio silence that generated this. Yeah.
They've always been like that. They've been very secretive about anything going on within, the royal family. You know?
It was just a nothing burger.
But maybe there's an extra element. The extra element that some people claim, and maybe it's true, is that they didn't want, there's maybe a bit of a stretch, but saying that because it's Charles with cancer and Kate with cancer, they're trying to work out how to actually announce it or when they would announce it or whatever, because some people are saying that, you know, it would give credence to the anti-vax.
Oh, 100%.
The COVID campaign that would provoke questions. But for the average person, I don't know. I see a lot of people with cancer and all sorts of illness these days, and I don't see a lot of people in terms of the average person
connecting the two.
Immediately going, well, you have to be, you have to be someone who was skeptical about it from the beginning, you know what I mean? People just go, oh, that's, yes, terrible. So many people have cancer these days. What do you do? You know, it's just life, you know. Well, so we'll just move on. We'll do our best.
Right.
So I don't know. It's all, it's all weird. Anyway, that's enough royals. Well, Albert Elf was talking about it, so.
I know, yeah. It's trending, right? Trendy news. Across the waters, Leo's out. Irish Taoiseach Prime Minister has resigned. Was it the anti-woke backlash? Or, as some theorists said, his little protest speech about Gaza, the White House, on St. Patrick's Day? That he was pushed out by the Biden White House.
By the Jews.
I don't think they have that much interest in which party apparatchik is in charge in Ireland. The White House will be more concerned if something else happens in Ireland, namely the anti-woke backlash generating a surprise election result, but I don't even see that happening. Not anytime soon, anyway. Ireland doesn't have a Trumpian political option. Not yet, anyway. I predicted this. I can't remember what tweet it was. Maybe it was her tweet about Rabbi Shmuley and just filth that she'd be gone in less than 2 weeks, and she's gone yesterday. Candace Owens been fired by the Daily Wire. The thing is, though, some of the things she'd been saying are anti-Semitic. Like, she's getting 5 anti-Semitisms out of 5 for some things. Like what? I can't remember.
Ah, come on.
I don't have any examples.
Don't have any examples?
No.
How can you accuse someone of being anti-Semitic and you can't provide any examples? We need examples.
She had another rabbi on for a debate. I forget his name too. Ah, Jesus. Maybe we shouldn't talk about this. I'm not informed enough on exactly the ins and outs. But anyway, the context in which this is happening is that obviously it's the reason she provoked is not that she's actually getting into theological debates with rabbis about whether or not Christ is king, which is the kind of religious rhetoric she's framing it in. What she's upset about is what Israel's doing in Gaza. That's what's going on. That's why people are getting themselves into hot water, getting fired for quote unquote anti-Semitism.
Yeah, and that's anti-Semitic.
Whether it was or not.
That's all you had to cite. She was sympathizing with the Palestinians. Right. That gets her at least 3 or 4 anti-Semitisms out of 5.
Just the sympathy. Okay.
Yes.
What else happened? Oh, yeah. So, it's funny, you know, all the NAFO trolls after Putin won. Yeah, but in Russia, all the political opposition is jailed. Of course Putin won. Meanwhile, in the United States, another member of the Trump administration has gone to prison. Peter Navarro, jailed on some technicality for not turning up in Congress for the January 6th investigation. But the real purpose has been achieved. Prison time for you, because you're one of the Trump terrorists, in quotes. What about this Boeing issue? It was insane that this Boeing whistleblower was supposed to give a legal deposition against his corporation's corrupt practices and blew his brains out in the car park the morning of, after publicly stating that he would not kill himself.
Mm-hmm.
Super dodgy. Then, as if sort of reality kind of confirmed it, this was so bizarre, I actually started conspiracy theorizing that this has got to be sabotage. Literally, the day after, another panel fell off of a Boeing plane en route to Alaska or Oregon or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the guy, Boeing whistleblower, found dead in car park. it was 2 weeks ago. Scroll down, what's his name? Forget his name. John Barna, who worked for Boeing for 32 years. He had already been giving evidence and was due to give another one that day about the firm's production standards, blah, blah, blah. And scroll down again. The 62-year-old died from a self-inflicted wound. Yeah. In 2019, Barnett told the BBC that under pressure workers at Boeing had been deliberately fitting substandard parts to aircraft on the production line.
Mm-hmm.
There's been people are connecting with, you know, DEI, diversity, equity and inclusion policies, i.e. recent-ish corporate practices, but are to blame. It's probably part of it, but I think it's longer term than that. It's probably going back to cutting corners, you know, in recent decades.
Yeah.
He was probably 20 years ago.
He was undoubtedly offed to save Boeing. He probably had a lot of pretty damaging information that was enough to kind of have him killed. This is a news report on him, actually, on have a listen.
But aren't you scared?
It's his sister, I think. And family friend.
His voice and the way he would talk, no, I ain't scared. He said, but if anything happens to me, it's not suicide. You know, I know that he did not commit suicide. There's no way. He loved life too much. He loved his family too much. He loved his brothers too much to put them through what they're going through right now.
And he basically told you not to believe it.
Hmm. But don't believe your eyes and ears. This kind of thing only happens in Russia. This never happens in the glorious West. Suicided. It's funny that suicided is even a term. Um, we should say something quickly on Israel. This is, I guess it makes me think of Russia as well, but another nail in the coffin of Russia cannot expand ever just because. Who does that, right? I mean, that's so like medieval. Well, Israel yesterday annexed, just declared Israeli public land, another 2,000 acres in the West Bank. And you think, well, whatever, they're taking it slowly anyway. Yeah, they're taking it field by field, but that's the largest single land grab since like the 80s or something. The West Bank, what's that got to do with Hamas, right? Nothing. Meanwhile, Israel is bombing Rafah. And, you know, not as much as they, not as intensively as they were months ago, but still, the situation is poised right now for the IDF to sweep in to the southern end and what? Drive the remaining Gazans into the sea. U.S. Secretary of State Blinken has said the U.S. will not support it. Yet Netanyahu has responded that they're going to do it with or without U.S. support.
Mm-hmm.
That's fight and talk. We'll see if he means that. They really are, we mocked it at the time, Biden's seaport for aid in Gaza. They really are building a port. Not on site yet. They're building a kind of huge pontoon in Virginia. And then it'll be shipped over there, supposedly.
Well, they're preparing the ground for it now off the...
They are doing some land work.
Well, they've been using the rubble from the destroyed houses.
According to
George Galloway, including the bones of people who were buried in those houses to kind of reclaim...
For foundation.
To reclaim some of the sea. You know,
and who's doing that building work? People in Gaza?
Contractors.
Maybe that's how they'll force the Gazans out. Build a pier, and Netanyahu will then send the troops in and get them onto ships. I'm not suggesting... that no one has said that, but like 1 + 1 = the US will set it up with the best of intentions, and then Israel will, you know, turn tables on it.
Suppose they're using it to, possibly, I mean, the claim is that they might use it to evacuate, quote unquote, to remove basically. Palestinians from Gaza. It'd be a way to... Israel just has to, you know, you're creating a situation where, you know, well, there's an option, I suppose. You're creating an exit point into the sea, ostensibly for aid, but that could be repurposed quite easily and quite quickly, immediately really, to just load people onto ships and take them to Egypt.
Yeah, Egypt, that's interesting. That is realistic.
Or somewhere, or because, nowhere, and then Egypt blockades them.
Von der Leyen met General/President Al-Sisi,
mm-hmm.
promised him €8 billion for something, for aid. The last time the EU was handing out that kind of cash was €5 billion to Turkey in 2015-16 to...
Take the
hold back the tide mm-hmm. of Syrian and Afghan refugees.
Mm-hmm.
Hold back the tide and or to keep them there, yeah. So Egypt would, it would be money for them to house them, what, in the Sinai Desert coming into the summer?
Well, that'd be planned.
Oh my God.
That'd be planned in advance, like, but it's just, there's a recipe, but it's a recipe for disaster, obviously, but there's, Israel obviously isn't backing down, psychos and all that they are. They obviously are pushing forward and not going to back down on their plan to basically turn all of Gaza into a Israeli beachfront property. And the Palestinians can go to hell, as far as they're concerned. They're certainly doing their best to... yeah.
Anything on Trump and the election? What is the status of your 2024 prediction? Because it's morphed a bit over the last year. What's your current prediction?
For 2024?
Yeah.
For what? It's for the whole year?
Well, the outcome of the election. Who will win?
Who's going to win? Oh, it's going to be marred by accusations and some evidence of fraud on one side or another, and it's going to be suspended. The outcome, the results will be suspended or postponed or pending an investigation.
And then you're in new territory because there's no, like, there's no contingency for that. There's no precedent who rules in that interim.
Yeah. Or Trump's going to be shot with a CIA heart attack gun. A heart attack dart.
Or that vaccine he touted so much, it's going to catch up with him.
Yes.
Or have an effect. What did he call it? Operation Warp Speed? He's still boasting about it over on Truth Social.
He can't help himself.
And it's the only time his posts get panned. But he still thinks it's politically good because it'll win me votes from the other side, maybe. Waste of time. Yeah, it's going to be chaos, I think, the US. The way they... This is not the first time this has been discussed, but slowly, actual legal changes are happening in the US to make real what would have been conspiracy theory just a year ago. I don't know if this might be behind a paywall, because over here in Europa, local US news sites are blocked by this, I don't know, what are they called, the GDPR thing? Mm. Oh, good, we can see it. Fox 5 New York. Migrants who serve in U.S. military can expedite path to citizenship, new bill proposes. That's so cynical and sinister. I know what we can do with them. Here's some weapons and weapons training. This is going to backfire. That's one development. Here's another one. Newsweek about a Supreme Court decision? I'm not sure. It was a court decision. Judge rules. I don't think it's Supreme Court. Undocumented immigrants can have right to own guns.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. So they can join the military. They can have guns. Democrats basically overlook them voting. In fact, they give them, they vote on their behalf, or they let them have ballots. So they can basically vote already, de facto, if not legally, have guns, join the military. I mean, they're using administrative law to effectively legalize the 10 million plus who've just come during Biden's three, four years towards full citizenship. It's crazy. It's absolutely, and it's non-democratic in the sense that there's no vote. It's just you get a judge to change, or a DA or prosecutor or something. It's changing the law by, it's underhanded. Mm-hmm. Technically, it's legit. You know, it's allowed to happen that way, but...
Yeah.
It's obviously not democratic. You didn't put this to a vote.
No, you
didn't have candidates who won on that platform.
Yeah. No, it's doing it extra judiciously, essentially, you know what I mean? As in, it's... Elon Musk was talking to somebody in an interview
activist
about it.
Judges.
And said that, at the very least, it's to increase the state representation to Congress and the Senate, because that's each state gets a certain amount of congressmen and congresswomen or whatever, and senators, based on the number of people in their state. So, you know, California has X millions of people, whatever, it gets 20 congressmen or whatever. So by increasing the number, you get more representatives sent from that state sent to Congress and the Senate, and also you get, for presidential elections, you get the number of what do you call them, what's that thing you get in the elections there? The way they count the...
Oh, the Electoral College.
Electoral College votes.
You get, it increases proportionally with the number of people.
Yeah, the same as Congressman Sanders increases proportionally. So the more lefty, supposedly, immigrants you get into a state, the more Electoral College votes that state would have then. So that's what he said anyway in terms of how it can be done. You know, it's not directly as in they're bringing these people in to give them immediately citizenship and the right to vote, and therefore you directly impact the vote tallies, but rather you can do it indirectly simply by the number of people in the state. You do a tally of the number in the state, and then you get an equivalent or a representative number of Electoral College votes. And supposedly, yeah, anyway.
And so, you thereby rig the election.
Yeah. Which,
you know, only Trump does, right? Yeah. No. Okay.
Yeah. So.
We're done.
I reckon there's not much else to talk about, I don't think. Obviously there's loads you could talk about, but then those are the main topics. Did you know that I once got fired from a canned juice factory? I'm working in a canned juice factory.
No, that's terrible.
I couldn't concentrate. That's the worst one yet. Neil.
Definitely. Where do you find these?
I don't know.
Is there a Twitter account you follow?
Just I don't know.
Lamest Jokes.
Lamest Jokes.
At Lamest Jokes.
Lamestjokes.com. yeah. So
you're getting some lols, but also booze.
Yeah, of course. But you got to get the booze. Like, I do it for the booze. So yeah, we're going to leave there for this week, folks. Thanks for listening, watching. Thanks for commenting, and don't forget to subscribe and stuff and smash all the buttons. We'll be back next week with another show on whatever nonsense has been happening between now and then. Unfortunately, so see you then. Have a good week. Bye.
Thanks for watching. Bye all.
Can't stop the signal now.